Last week, we began the series called Coming Home. And when we talk about coming home, what we are referring to is what it looks like to return to or build a place where we are at home in our relationship with God. What it looks like to be in a place where we understand who God created us to be. We're not talking about a building, or we're not talking about the house we actually live in. We're talking about what it means to be in a place where we are confident in who God says we are. For some of us, growing up, our homes were places that were where we felt loved and known, places where we could relax, laugh, and be ourselves. For some of you, your parents, and you've watched your kids grow up in their home, and you watch them discover who they are, develop their personalities, being themselves in the safety and context of their home. For some of you, maybe that doesn't describe the house you grew up in at all. And so maybe for you, it's difficult to attach and understand your relationship with God in connection to a metaphor of being at home. But hopefully somewhere along the way for you, you also understand what it means to have a person or place where you felt at home. Maybe somewhere you didn't have to perform, somewhere you didn't have to pretend, somewhere where you could breathe and simply be who you are. Maybe it was a teacher who made you feel safe when maybe it wasn't safe at home, or maybe a coach who brought out something in you that pushed you in ways that helped you become something that maybe you didn't even see in yourself. And so throughout this series, we are looking at what does it mean to have that kind of relationship with God. That God, as our Heavenly Father, what does it look like to understand? How do we see ourselves the way that God himself sees us? How do we see through the lens that he sees when he looks at us? And when we have wandered away from home, when we have gone off the path, how do we return back to that kind of relationship with God? And so we're spending 3 weeks in one of Jesus' most familiar stories. Jesus tells a number of different parables throughout the Gospels. One of them, perhaps one of the most popular, is the story of the prodigal son, a story of two different sons, one of them a rebellious son who runs away. But it's not just a story of that son, it's a story of a father and two sons. Two sons who we both find are disconnected from their father. Two sons who lose sight of their identity, who lose sight of who they truly are. Two different sons who need to rediscover what it means to be at home. Last week, we focused on the younger son. And so in the story that Jesus tells, the younger son asks his father for his inheritance early. It's essentially him asking telling his father he wishes he was dead. He'd be better off to him if he could just have all of his resources and do what he wants with it. And so the father gives him his share of the inheritance early, and he goes off, he leaves home, he travels to a distant country and wastes everything he has. Eventually, he finds himself in a pig pen, which is the lowest of the lows, as Jesus is telling the story. It's the worst it could possibly get. And so he's so hungry that the only option he has is to eat the food being given to the pigs. It's the lowest point in his life. He's far from home. He's lost everything. He's wasted everything. And Jesus tells the story and says that the son came to his senses. Another translation says he came to himself. And so the point, as we looked at the story of the younger son, was just that, is there comes a point when we all need to come to ourselves, to come to our senses, to begin to realize that maybe we are far from home, to realize that the ways we have pursued fulfillment, the ways that we have sought out meaning is empty. That we need to come to our senses, to come to the realization that we aren't realizing who God meant us to be. And so that was the invitation for us last week, because sometimes we spend much of our lives trying to become somebody else. We spend much of our lives in a pursuit of something, so much so that we often lose sight of who God created us to be. We talked about a number of empty P's, pursuits that ultimately become false identities for us, that distract us and pull us away from who God intended for us to be. Distractions like pleasure and praise, power, popularity, productivity, possessions, perfection, all that can become sources of comfort or value, but often end up leading us to be searching for more. And so in the story of the younger son, we found that he was searching for something in pleasure. That he was dealing with not knowing who he is by pursuing pleasure or maybe acquiring possessions, all in the hopes that it will give him some sort of meaning. And then eventually he realizes that whatever he was looking for, he couldn't find it. We reminded ourselves that some of us, in our pursuits for meaning and identity, we end up trapped in the past. That we get stuck. We can't help but look at the things that we regret, or maybe what somebody said or did to us, a label that's given to us, a sin that we've struggled with. And it continues to be carried to with us into the present moment, so much so that we can't see ourselves how God sees ourselves. We only see ourselves by what happened or what we did. Others of us become trapped in the future, constantly looking to tomorrow, what could happen, what could go wrong, or who could we become one day, all the while missing who we are in the present moment. The younger son, when he came to his senses, he realized he needed to go back home. And he could look back and find himself trapped in all of the things he did wrong, all the things that he, all the mistakes, all the ways he betrayed his father. And certainly, even in the speech he prepares as he's going home, he certainly is holding on to some of that. He's going to go home and say, I'm unworthy to be called your son. But somehow there's just enough of him that allows him to go home anyways and not hold on to those things that would hold him back. And instead of being trapped in tomorrow and his inability to be who he should be, he goes home to his father. And when he returns, he discovers his father never stopped seeing him as a son. He went home being prepared to be treated like a slave, but at least have a roof over his house, to be embraced, to be restored. And the father runs to him, embraces him, restores him, throws him a party. Because even though the son came home feeling unworthy, his feelings did not get the final word. The father did. If you could open your Bibles to Luke chapter 15, I want to pick it up where we left off last week. We're going to pick it up in verse 25, which is a shorter portion as we focus on the story of the older son. But the reason I want to focus on this portion of the story is significant because sometimes being far from home is really obvious. Like when we read the story of the younger son, like it's clear he's rebelling. It's clear and obvious he's searching for something. He's going off, and the text says he was living a wild life and a wasteful life. It's obvious. And eventually he spent it all, he partied, he wasted it all. And he's in the pig pit. It's the worst of the worst. But sometimes being far from home is far less obvious. For the older brother, we're about to find out that he was also on a search of his own and nobody realized it. Because it wasn't easy to notice. He wasn't wasting his money. He was working hard. He wasn't living in wild living. He was doing everything right. Yet just like his younger brother, he was trying to figure out who he really was. Trying to understand himself in relationship to his father. So begin verse 25. It says this, meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing, so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in, so his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? My son, the father said, you are always with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. The older brother, like the younger brother, is on a pursuit for meaning and significance to understand who he is. Last week when we shared a number of the empty ways that we often are tempted to find our own identity, some of them that we shared could be clearly seen in the younger son. The younger son pursues pleasure as though that will help him deal with the pain and the hurt in his life. And as he pursues pleasure, it doesn't actually give him meaning. He pursues possessions, with all the wealth that his money could buy. He can buy whatever he wants, and it doesn't ever give him the happiness. He certainly, in the parties, pursues popularity. But then as soon as it runs out, his friends are gone. But it's interesting, if we look at the same kind of journey in the older brother, what you'll find is he's having the same problem, but on a different course. The older brother isn't living in wild living, and so he's certainly not pursuing pleasure, but he's trying to be productive. Even when the younger son comes home, he's out in the field working. He's a hard-working man, and it's not enough. Like, he's out in the field every single day, and it's never enough. He never feels like he's done enough for his dad. He's living for the approval of his father. Living, if only he makes the right decision, if only he does the right thing, if he makes the right choices with his money, if he has the right conversations, if he asks or doesn't ask for the right things, then his father will be proud of him, and he ends up feeling empty. He's seeking out his identity in his perfectionism. If only he can live a life that doesn't ever make a mistake, if only he can live in such a way he does no wrong, then his father will be happy with him. And it's interesting, because I don't know if you would ever even notice this in the older brother. Like, if you were friends with the older brother, you'd just say, no, he's a good man. He does what is right. You'd probably describe him as having integrity and being hardworking. But all of a sudden, the text reveals to us some things that were buried deep. Because for the younger son, it's obvious, but for the older one, it's not obvious. And all of a sudden, like, the son hears some music in the background and wants to know, what's this all about? And then it all comes out. All the pain he left undealt with, all his own insecurities, it all bubbles out to the surface in anger. See, when we don't know who we really are, we tend to find a way to avoid it. We avoid the pain, we avoid the blame, we avoid the criticism, we avoid the disgrace, we avoid the loss, we avoid the sin. Like, we will do whatever we can. And that doesn't always mean, like, we distract ourselves with pleasure, with making sinful choices. Sometimes we just work really hard. Sometimes we avoid it by trying to never screw up, to be perfect, to be productive, to have the position, to give ourselves to our career. All of it, though, ends up being the same thing. It's a distraction from a source of pain. And so we distract ourselves with pleasure, maybe to avoid pain, or we distract ourselves with popularity to avoid a disappointed father. Or we distract ourselves with perfectionism because we don't want to experience the potential of criticism. This is also why fighting sin can be so challenging, because the tendency when we have behavioral patterns where we return to the same sins over and over and over again, what we tend to do is we'll identify the sin we need to fight against, but we'll not identify the source of pain that causes the sin. Right? We'll notice, like, oh, I have an addictive pattern, and so I keep turning to this way of dealing with my struggle over and over, and then what happens is that, well, if only I work hard and stop this. If only I fight against the temptation, but then we never slow down long enough to ask ourselves, well, why? What is the pain? What is the hurt? What is the false identity that I'm ignoring that is leading to this temptation, that is leading to this addiction, that is leading to this struggle? And when we don't ever deal with the source, inevitably, we just replace one sin with another. And so, sure, maybe you had enough willpower to curb your habits a little bit, but then what happens? You just replace it with something else, because why? The same fears are still there. The same false identity is still there. The same insecurity is still there. Because all of us, we are finding ways to avoid our pain. And for some of us, it's obvious, and for some of us, it's not. There's a famous Rembrandt painting where he actually highlights the story of the prodigal son. And it's fascinating in the way he highlights the story, because when we read the scriptures, what we understand is the older brother is not actually in the scene. Right, the older brother in the scene that the scriptures describe is the older brother is out working in the field when the father embraces the son. But Rembrandt decides he is going to highlight not only the love of the father's embrace towards the younger son, but also the older brother being the chief witness to this whole thing. Off to the side, yet seemingly still highlighted, describing what happens when the older brother is the chief witness to what the younger son experiences. The older son is angry and resentful, while the younger son is alive and set free. Both of them on pursuits for identity and meaning. The younger son here is finding it. The older in his pursuits of making the father happy and people-pleasing, still hasn't found it. Some even say that maybe even Rembrandt experiencing the same kind of tension, that even the painting itself was Rembrandt's seeking after approval and people-pleasing, maybe feeling like the older brother who can't quite get what he's looking for. Henry Nouwen, who writes a book about this parable and this painting, writes and describes the story by saying, not only did the younger son who left home to look for freedom and happiness in a distant country get lost, but the one who stayed home also became a lost man. Exteriorly, he did all the things a good son is supposed to do, but interiorly, he wandered away from his father. He did his duty, worked hard every day, fulfilled all his obligations, but became increasingly unhappy and unfree. The older son's path to unhappiness and emptiness looked like obedience and hard work and perfectionism. On the inside, he was far from home, and then all of it comes out, because it always eventually comes out. Like, you can bury all those things deep. You cannot know who you really are. You can have resentment and frustration and pain and loss, and you can decide, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to deal with it. And you can bury it all out down there, but eventually it comes out. Like, eventually something makes it snap. And for the older brother, it's hearing the music when his younger brother came home. Verse 29, he says, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Right, this isn't about the party. This isn't about his younger brother. This is about all of the stuff he pushed down that he hadn't dealt with. Like, he could have talked about these things with his father. He could have had the party. This is all the stuff he just didn't deal with, and all the problems with the ways he's been seeing himself, and it all comes out to the surface in this moment. One pastor by the name of Jesse Cruikshank, in a book about discipleship, describes this when she says, when the older son sees the party held in celebration of his brother's homecoming, he begins to complain. The father, as gracious and patient with the older brother as he is with the younger, endures the shame of leaving the party and goes out to speak with his son. It's in this short exchange that we see the warped motivation of the older brother. All these years I've been slaving for you, he says, his words dripping with venom and barely concealed rage towards his father's, towards his father. In all the work in the fields, in all the obedience, in all of it, what we find is there's this motivation. He's been slaving for his father. Feels like a slave in order to win the approval of his father. This is not just like a statement you just make because you're having a bad day. This is something that's been brewing for a very long time. It's a kind of statement because he's been living with a false identity based on his production, a false identity based on his perfectionism, a false identity based on his position in the family. Never wanting to drop the ball like his younger brother did, only realizing here that maybe it doesn't actually matter. And all of a sudden, he starts to realize that he's felt forgotten and unseen. It all comes out in anger. See, the younger son was no longer shackled to his past regrets or his unknown future. He became like a child. It's an incredible storyline that the younger son had a whole bunch of things that he could regret. A whole bunch of baggage, a whole bunch of sin, and that is not holding him back when he returns home. He's loved and experiences the love and joy and the embrace of his father. And there's a whole lot of unknowns when he's eating in the pig pit, and he doesn't let any of that stop him. He simply returns home, and he experiences the joy of becoming like a child, embraced by his father. He thought he was just going to be a slave. And he finds out that he was never not seen as a son. But the older son was shackled to his past resentment and his unknown future, and he was acting childish. He's a slave to his resentments towards his father and towards his younger brother. The unknown future of what life looks like as the younger brother returns home, and he starts to act childish, throwing a tantrum as he refuses to enter the party. And it's not like he's without reason for throwing the tantrum. He's got deep pain. He feels forgotten. He feels unloved and unknown. As soon as the younger son comes back home, we realize that the older son is far from home. And I wonder how often that's our same story. That we're a slave to something. And that maybe we're not like the younger brother, and we're not a slave to the pleasures of this world and pursuing a false identity in those ways, but maybe we've become slave to a false identity that everybody around us is pretty affirming of. That maybe we've become slaves to being a hard worker, a slave towards perfectionism, a slave towards morality and never sinning and never messing up. The irony with becoming a slave to those things is most people in your life will encourage it. Most people in your life, if you go to work and you're a perfectionist, you're going to be applauded by your employer for having an identity that's tied to perfectionism because you're going to do really good at your job. And you might live a life where you are operating because you're just a people pleaser and you want to make the people around you happy. You know who's going to encourage that? All the people around you, because you're making them really happy. Right? See, the emptiness that the older son has is certainly affirmed by all the people in his life. And then he's realizing that he is far from God. One German mystic said, God is at home. It's we who have gone out for a walk. God's not left. And maybe you feel far from God. Maybe you feel far from God because you're like, I'm doing the right things. I'm saying the right things. I'm praying the right prayers. I'm practicing the right spiritual disciplines. And all of it is coming up empty. And maybe it's not that God isn't there. But maybe we have misplaced our identity in the things that we're doing for God instead of doing those things in response to who God already is and already says we are. So the older son already had the opportunity and the relationship and the access, and he missed it. He already was loved by his father, seen by his father. He had the position. He could have the food, the party, the celebration any time, but he was out slaving away. He was trying to earn an approval he already had. Are we trying to earn something that's already ours? When we try to form our identity from the outside in, we end up a slave. We end up a slave to something outside of us, a slave to our perfection, a slave to good behavior, a slave to the approval of others, a slave even to the approval of God. For both the younger son and the older son, they ended up slaves. One a slave to what he had in the pursuit of pleasure, one a slave to good behavior. And it's interesting, we don't really ever find out, does the older son come to his senses? Jesus doesn't have that part of the story, and I can't help but wonder, like, does he? Or does everybody just keep reinforcing the path he's already on? a path where he's trying to understand himself from the outside. And he's continually looking, what does my dad say? How do I do at my job? How do I do at my behavior? See, Jesus, as he tells a story, he wants to remind us something significant, that there is a better way. A way that finds our identity not outside of us, but inside of us. A way that's transformative and lasting. In Romans 12, the Apostle Paul describes this when he says, do not conform to the pattern of this world. The pattern of this world, in this case, be how we understand our identity. The way the world forms our identity is from the outside in. It's by what people say. It's by your job, your position, your relationships. Something outside of you is what defines who you are. That is the pattern of this world. What Paul is saying, but don't find your formation from the outside in, but instead be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Begin inside, in your mind, in your heart. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. It's a transformation that starts on the inside, a transformation that's not based on what people around us say. It's not based on our accomplishments, our possessions, our behavior. It's why it's significant what happens in the younger son when he comes to his senses, because when he's coming to his senses, he's having a renewing of his mind. God is revealing something, and then it changes his behavior. He goes back home. It's what the older son needs too. The older son needs a renewing of his mind to realize that he felt like a slave, but he wasn't. He is a son. And Jesus is encouraging the same transformation in us, to be transformed from the inside out. Because most of us have learned that the way we operate is changing things on the outside first, to behave better, to work harder, to stop making the same mistakes, to be more disciplined, more productive, more impressive, more spiritual. And all of those can be fine things, but it doesn't actually change the inside. Because if we only change what's happening on the outside without ever allowing Jesus into the places of pain and the places of sin, eventually it still comes out. The same resentment shows up in another relationship. The same insecurity attaches itself to another accomplishment. The same fears find another thing to control. The same emptiness leads us searching in a whole different way. And the same sins keep coming out, no matter how hard we try to avoid it all. The older son spent years avoiding what was really going on. He kept working, he kept obeying, he kept producing, he kept doing all what he thought were the right things. But underneath it all, resentment was building. Beneath it all was a belief that he'd been forgotten. Beneath it all was a son who lived in his father's house, but he felt like a slave. And the way out of that forgottenness, the way out of feeling like a slave is to go into that place of pain. And Jesus is inviting us to go to that place. Not because it makes the pain worse, but because that's the way that transformation actually begins. The places where there is pain and loss, Jesus invites us to go to those places so that there can be healing. The places of abandonment, Jesus invites us to go to those places so that we can find hope. The places of sin, Jesus invites us to go to so that we can find forgiveness. And do you realize what the Father does in the story? Like, we know the party. Like, that's obvious. It's the big obvious way the father responds. But not only does he respond to the younger son while the younger son is still far off, while the party is going on, the father leaves the party. Because at the same moment that God is celebrating that somebody else figured out who they truly were, Jesus is also ready to go find you while you don't know who you really are. The father leaves the party despite the shame of not being at the party that he is throwing in order to meet the older son where he is. Jesus is inviting you to know who you truly are, to know that you are loved. Not based on your good performance or your perfectionism, not based on your accomplishments. He wants you to know that you are his. You are always with him. And you don't need to earn your Father's approval. You already have it. You already belong. Jesus is inviting you to be transformed from the inside out. And so maybe for you today, that's a reminder that you are invited back home. And maybe you didn't go far off. In fact, maybe you've been close by the whole time. You still heard the things he was saying, maybe even still practicing what it looks like. But underneath it all, there have been some things that you've been avoiding. Some fears that you don't want to admit. Some sins that you don't want to say out loud. Or maybe a need that you feel like you have to prove that you are good enough for God. But it's in those places that you are afraid to go to that Jesus is already waiting to meet you there. Not because he wants to condemn you, not to shame you, not to scare you, but because he wants you to know who you really are. That you're not a slave trying to earn your place. You are a child who's been invited home. You are a son, you are a daughter, and you may have not felt like it, but you've always been one. And so Jesus wants to give you eyes to see yourself the way the Father sees you. To give you a new way of seeing. To transform you from the inside so that you might see what he sees and so that you might celebrate like the younger son got to celebrate.